It rubs the lotion on its skin. It does this whenever it's told.
Mister, my family will pay cash. Whatever ransom you're asking for, they'll pay it.
It rubs the lotion on its skin, or else it gets the hose again.
Or else it gets the hose again. In 1991, Silence of the Lambs was released to massive critical and commercial acclaim. Like most people, I went to see it, and I was completely blown away. The film is full of memorable scenes, but one of the ones that immediately struck me, got just stuck in my head, was a scene where Catherine Martin, the senator's daughter, is driving just before she gets abducted by Buffalo Bill. And the lyrics are, after all, it was a great big world with lots of places to run. Yeah. And if she had been trying, she had one little promise she was going to keep. Oh, yeah. All right. Take it easy, baby. Make it last all night. She was an American girl. It's freaking perfect for that scene. If you haven't seen Silence of the Lambs in a while, go back and rewatch it. And, you know, but now I can't hear American Girl on the radio without thinking about Catherine Martin rocking out just before she's about to become Buffalo Bill's next victim. So on this week's Ludini Rock and Roll Circus podcast, we are going to tell you the stories behind 15 songs, maybe a few more, that helped to create magic movie moments. Get ready to rock out with your talk out. It's the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus. Welcome, moms and dads, boys and girls, children of all ages, to the circus. My name is Ludini. I am the ringmaster of this masterpiece of a podcast. Tonight, we have the full band in the house. Really looking forward to it. We have Keitha Hawk Hawkins back after a bit of a hiatus. We have Lily V6 from Rock Rage Radio. Ooh. We have Pittsburgh Kevin as well hanging out with us for today's show. So we're going to have a really good time. All of us, all four of us are giant movie people. So, you know, we all, you know, when we discuss this topic, everybody's like putting their hand up. Oh, I know the song. I know the song. This is going to be, we all have a lot to say here. I don't want to take too much time. Wolf's Customs, go to wolfscustoms.online. Get custom paint job done on your musical instrument of any kind. Wolf Customs, wolfscustoms.online. Chris Thunderwolf Dodson and company have been good friends of the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus for a while. And so we want to give them a shout out. So go to wolfscustoms.online, rockrageradio.com, download the app, listen to great music 24/7, totally freaking free. And then check out our websites, lulombardimusic.com. I just released a new song. Also go to ludinirockandrollcircus.com and you can read Keith's bio. You can read Lily's bio. You can get all kind of information, find out stuff about back episodes, merchandise, all kind of cool stuff. ludinirockandrollcircus.com. So let's get into it. Let's just not, without further ado, I don't want to spend, because I think we have a lot to talk about. I think we all love this topic. So, rock music, pop music, in movies, they're sometimes, right, it makes these scenes, like, they just become so explosive. And that's the gist of what we're getting into. And I want to start, because we haven't heard from him in a while, I want Keitha Hawk Hawkins to pop the cherry on this one for us, if you wouldn't mind.
It's been a while since I had to do that. Okay, so we're going to go with one of probably, I mean, it's in no particular order, right? So I'm going to go with one of my favorite movies of all time and one of the best scenes, I think, in this movie, which is hard to say because there's a ton, but I'm going to go Tiny Dancer, Almost Famous. The bus scene is amazing. The band is like at an all-time low. You got guys, you know, on acid. He's, you know, talking crap to everybody, jumping off roofs. The band is just in total disarray. They're not talking to each other at all. Then all of a sudden, a great song comes on, and you're like, and it solves all the problems. The bass player starts singing the tunes, and a little bit into the song, and the bass player, which I don't even know the freak guy's name, you start singing the song, next thing you know, the whole bus is just rocking, man. And that just, it goes to show you that a great song can just heal whatever you need it to. They were buddies after that again for the next 5 minutes or so, I'm sure.
For as long as a band can be.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's...
The That is a movie by Cameron Crowe, kind of based on his early experiences as a Rolling Stone rock reporter for Rolling Stone. And you would think, and I would sure that that song was chosen specifically for that moment. What a lot of people don't understand about sometimes pop music in movies is that very often these songs are chosen by what they call music supervisors. And they sit there and look at the movie and go like, okay, cool, license this song. No, that one's too expensive. Okay, we'll get this one. That kind of fits there. Okay, just put that here. And that's kind of how it's done most of the time. However, I believe that all of us have songs on our list like that one where the director was so into music that they had a direct hand and like, no, this song has to be here because of, you know, this is what I'm going for in the movie. And Keith, that's an example of that. Definitely you would, with someone like Cameron Crowe, you know, he's, you know, because he was a giant music guy. Married to and Wilson, Nancy Wilson for a bit.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mart. Yes.
I might have known that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Back in the day.
Yeah. They were so in love. I remember reading her talking about it in a magazine. I was like, yeah, we'll see how long it lasts. Okay. Then we're going to mix it up. Since we're in the K's tonight, let's go to Pittsburgh, Kevin.
Hey,
we'll mix it up a little bit. You hear Lily and I talk all the time.
Well, I had to laugh because I was laughing at you guys today because I'm sure you guys are doing all kind of research and blah blah blah. All I did was walk across my living room and check out my DVD. Oh yeah, that song, that DVD. Okay, so I got some obscure ones. My first one is Van Halen. Everybody Wants Some from the movie Better Off Dead. Do you remember that with John Cusack?
Oh, yeah. Unfortunately, Kevin, yes, but I know exactly. It gets into the Pat Pig part. He's making the hamburgers.
Exactly, right?
It's
weird because every time I hear that song, there's a little hamburger dancing in my head.
All right. Good. This is a good pick. So no background information now and maybe about it? Or
no, I'm Pittsburgh Kevin.
Okay.
I'm the epitome of lazy.
Gotcha.
The all least right, well, amount of work.
There is a part where a hamburger is dancing, and it does have an Eddie Van Halen looking guitar, though. He's playing
it. Yes, he does. It has the stripes. Now you remember,
that
right?
Yes. Yeah, that's...
As far as movies go, John Cusack's in it. I mean, it's a piece of shit movie. But at the same time, it did have a couple cool tunes in it. So, yeah, that just being one of them.
I totally know that scene. Okay. It's all coming back to me now. Just like Celine Dion.
It's all coming back to you now, yes.
Oh, my God. My sister from another mister. Celine Dion, I mean Lily V6. So Lily V6, I know you are from Rock Rage Radio. I know rock music is just like coursing through your mind all day long. You're thinking about rock stuff.
Sometimes it's a curse.
I got you.
When you just belt out things at work.
So I'm very interested. What's your first pick?
My first pick is going to be old time rock and roll.
Good one.
Bob Seger, Risky Business. Iconic, yes. Very iconic scene. Very memorable scene. Tom Cruise is left alone. Senior in high school, he's realizing that he has a weekend of freedom, and the first thing he does is strip down to his underwear, t-shirt, and socks, slides across the floor, and starts with his candlestick microphone and starts singing and belting out to this song, and it is fantastic. Don't necessarily like Tom Cruise, but it's a fun movie, and I really love it. I mean, don't we all just get naked when our parents aren't home when we were in high school? I don't know. But in a long ago interview for a magazine, Cruise remembered Brickman giving him the option of finding another song. And Tom Cruise said, no, nothing beats Bob Seger for this song. So, and another cool fact is I met Curtis Armstrong this weekend, and he's in that movie.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
He's Miles. So.
That's right. Curtis is in that.
Yes.
He's also a booger in Revenge of the Nerds, if you remember that.
Oh, yeah, he's in all kinds of stuff. He's in Supernatural.
And was in Better Off Dead.
Yeah, he's in, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
He's like a real utility guy.
Yeah.
You know.
Go-to fella.
He was super nice, too. He signed my book. But yes, that is one of the ones I remember most. Seeing when I was younger, probably shouldn't have seen that when I was younger, but that's okay.
That is
Rebecca De Mornay in that movie.
Yeah, the hot as you know.
Full
what.
Frontal, basically.
Hey,
yeah, very, yes.
On the train. People like tried to do the dance moves to that and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And clubs and everything. I mean, it was all that. It really was all that. I mean, that's the thing. If you remember nothing else about that movie, you remember that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Legit. I mean,
that's like one of the most. That's like the definition of iconic kind of scene.
I think, definitely for sure. I think that's not. It wouldn't be the last time that Tom Cruise jumped on some furniture.
Truth.
I think now that you've said that, Keith, that kind of puts that jumping on Oprah's couch in a different light. He could have just been like, I'm just reliving my risky business days.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Man, you know, yeah,
if you think about it, maybe it wasn't sure. Maybe it wasn't all we made it out to be. In any case, let's move on. I want to pick. Can I pick one?
Yes.
You can pick one.
Please.
Pick one, Mama, please. Can I?
Please do. Please do.
All right. I want to pick this one. I'm just going to jump right in with Stuck in the Middle with You. From the Reservoir.
One of my favorite scenes ever. I laughed so hard, and I still do, and that's kind of sick. Yeah, but yeah, I still laugh.
Wow. I don't really feel like I should even talk now.
Sorry. I lose my whole mind when he starts talking to the ear. I'm sorry.
This, again, is a song that was specifically chosen for this scene. In fact, Michael Madsen is listening to the song as they are filming it and everything. It's not, this was not, Quentin Tarantino wanted this. This is written, but this is performed by the band Steeler's Wheel. Have you ever heard the Jeff Healey version, Keith?
Yeah.
No, I've heard the Sheryl Crow version, but it's called something else. it's called All I Want to Do Is Have Some Fun. She liked that song so much that she ripped it off and made it her own song.
Well, you should hear. Jeff Healey does a great version, much more up, like rock kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Kick-ass.
Really? No,
rock,
I've never heard that. I like that tune though. It's not even when I'm like kind of WDVE rocks kind of vibe to it.
Yeah,
electric. It's Electric Lunch all over it.
You know who wrote that, Keith? It's performed by Steeler's Wheel, but Steeler's Wheel was a guy named Joe Egan and a guy you'll know this name, Jerry Rafferty. I did not know that. Did you know that?
Baker Street Jerry Rafferty?
Yeah, that Jerry Rafferty.
Guy got his hands on a lot of stuff, that Jerry Rafferty. Guy he is, man. I tell you, what a songwriting machine.
Yep, they were to, this was a duo, and they just called themselves Steeler's Wheel and had put out that record.
Interesting.
But there is a quote from Tarantino about this. And personally, I don't know if Jerry Rafferty necessarily appreciated the connotations that I brought to Stuck in the Middle with You. There's a good chance he didn't. But that's one of the things about using music in movies that's so cool. The fact, if you do it right, it's about as cinematic as a thing as you can do. You're really doing what movies do better than any other art form. It works on the visceral, emotional, cinematic way that's special. And when you do it right, you hit it right, then you can... never really hear that song again without thinking about that image from the movie. Yep. You know, so this is exactly the whole point of what we're talking about today. Also, like, it's so perfect for the scene because he's stuck in the middle. You know, there's the other character, you know, and the way it's shot with Michael Madsen character. Who is he? Was he Mr. White?
Mr. Blonde.
Dancing around.
Doesn't he ask them when he does that? As he asked, did you hear that? No, I guess you didn't.
Yeah. just an interesting fact about the scene. I know Lily has some. She wants to say
I have a little
this,
bit.
But that scene was originally, believe it or not, it was originally way more graphic.
Way really?
More graphic. Yes. Wow. If you get the DVD, I believe this is the only special feature. They give you the how it was originally done, and it is way more. And you see the ear, and it's really like. But it kind of it's so gross that it kind of takes you out of the scene. You start looking at the special effect instead of look. You know what I mean? So they decided to go without that. Lily, I know you want to talk about that.
Oh, this is, he actually sort of improvised this as well. He was told, when he read the script, it says Mr. Blonde manically dances around, and he kept thinking, what the fuck does that mean, Mick Jagger? So that's what was going on in his head. But then he started thinking about a weird little dance that Jimmy Cagney did in a movie, and that's what he sort of went with, which I thought was interesting. So improvised a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. When you started out with nothing, you're proud of yourself. You're proud you're a self-made man, and your friends, they all come a calling, slap you on the back, and say, "Please, please." This is the lyrics that are happening while this horrible thing is going on. You know, I'm stuck in the middle with you, wondering what else I should do. It's so hard to keep the smile from my face, losing control. Yeah, I'm all over the place. I mean, crazy. Keith, I know you got some stuff you want to talk about. This? No.
What, Robert? Reservoir Dogs?
Yeah, did you want to mention something about this scene?
Oh, no, it's just, you know, it's a Tarantino film. He's one of my faves. I mean, that's definitely a graphic scene. I've never seen the scene you're talking about where it's more graphic. I'm sure it'd be right up my alley, but that's jacked up like that. So, but yeah, it's a great scene. And when I hear that song, that would definitely make my list. And it's like I said, I just wrote a bunch down. So it's, yeah, it's one of them songs that I would have eventually put on it anyway. So yeah, that's bringing that one home on that one.
I think it's definitely one of those scenes where for most people, if you know the movie at all, when that song comes on the radio, it's like, oh yeah, I'm here at Reservoir Dogs. Like, you know, that like bops into your brain somehow. So, all right, Keith, go ahead. Give us another one.
Okay, I'm going to go with this song was popular way before this movie came out. But once you kind of hear this song and then see the actual craziness that's going on with it, it just makes the song that much better. And it's just a funny ass scene. It's Somebody to Love by Jefferson Airplane or Starship at that time. I think it was probably Airplane. It was Jim Carrey doing it in The Cable Guy, where he's doing this karaoke jam and that comes on and he has like kind of a speech impediment in it. Speech impediment, I have one now too. There's a speech impediment in the movie and it just, not that I'm making fun of that, it just makes it funnier. And he's doing like all these crazy like dances. He's like actually on the floor at some point and there's just like people that are his customers. It looks like some kind of Island of Misfit freaking toys that are in the background just jamming along to him. But it's if you've never seen that scene in that movie, The Cable Guy, it's hilarious the way he just dances and he kind of just owns that whole scene. It's like the best scene in the flick, man. I'm telling you, it's really, really funny. A lot of people I know, Jim Carrey's kind of one of those take or leave people for some. He's one of them guys who's take or leave for most people. But I think that in that particular, where he does physical comedy, that's his shit. So I mean, that's what to me is so funny about it. The fact where he's just like actually really singing. He's really, really into it. And I mean, if you've never seen the scene, that's a funny ass scene in that movie.
I kind of feel like that scene in that movie is like the start of where we start seeing his crazy too. So I think that's important to the movie.
It was always one of the movies that was labeled a dark comedy, but I mean, because it does deal with a lot of like someone that's going nuts and stalking someone basically, but it's still got some, I mean, still has some really funny parts in it. So it's, yeah, it's a darker comedy, but it's like that scene alone in that movie is just 5 minutes of awesome, just piss your pants funny. I'm sorry.
I've never seen Cable Guy. However, I know this. Let me tell you why. Because this was something I think started in the 90s where if there was a song in the movie, they would make that scene from the movie the video.
The video.
MTV and VH1.
And that's how there is a music video, and they use that Jim Carrey doing it. And it's actually credited as Jim Carrey singing Somebody to Love.
Oh, and there's
it's
that.
Not, yeah. And even though he's pantomiming to Grace Slick. So that is how I've seen it. It's insane.
Yeah, that's some funny shit. I mean, it's definitely, like I said, in that movie, I think it's got some overall funny parts in it. But, I mean, that's my favorite scene in the flick, man.
All right. Pittsburgh Kevin.
All right. So the band, you either listen to the news. The song is Hip to Be Square. The movie, American Psycho. This is when Christian Bale is dancing around in his kind of see-through raincoat and he's getting ready to kill Jared Leto. And I do have a little bit of
Why this is funny.
Before you give us your background, I want you to give us your background, but I want to do a little interlude here.
All right.
You like Huey Lewis on the news?
They're okay.
Their early work was a little too new wave for my taste. But when Sports came out in 83, I think they really came into their own, commercially and artistically.
Oh boy.
The whole album has a clear, crisp sound and a new sheen of consummate professionalism that really gives the songs a big boost.
I love his little review as he's preparing to chop
this guy. He's been compared to Elvis Costello, but I think Huey has a far more bitter, cynical sense of humor.
Hey, Albert's dream. Yes, Alan?
Okay, so just that's the dialogue there. Yeah, yeah. Or Patrick doing his little
I like the riff,
little shuffle there
with it too. Yeah,
yeah. Go ahead.
But what happened was, so they released the soundtrack with the song on it, then had to recall the soundtrack and re-release it without the song on it. Now, the rumor was that Huey Lewis did not like the whole connotation of what it was associated with. The truth is, the film production guys got the rights for the movie, but not the rights for the soundtrack. So Yeah, there you go. So if you buy the soundtrack today, not on there.
Although well, that's poop. It's a very important song. Well, this has great. It does have a great 80s soundtrack, though.
Oh, yeah.
That isn't just.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. But I, every time I hear that, I just I see Patrick with that X.
yeah, that is. If you haven't never, if you've never seen that movie, if you see, you know the movie, right, Keith?
Yeah, it's been a while since I've seen it, though. I've only seen it maybe like once or twice, actually.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's a great movie.
It's really fun. It's a good one.
It's fun.
It is. It's fun.
It is fun.
It's a fun movie about someone serial killing.
I mean, you know, they're all fun, right?
I mean, those movies are fun, I think.
Can't even stand
they
it.
Are. Okay, Lily V6.
So you spoke about Cameron Crowe. Now I'm going to speak about Cameron Crowe. In Your Eyes, Say Anything,
yes.
Peter Gabriel. No one who's seen Cameron Crowe's generation-defining romance, Say Anything, can forget the iconic moment when Lloyd Dobler is standing under Diane's window with the boombox held high with this song playing. It's like reminiscent of when they made love the first time in the car, because that's the song that was playing, and she was so excited that the song was on. But what was actually playing on the boombox during filming was Bonin' in the Boneyard. Don't know if you knew that, but that was actually on the boombox as the filming was going on. I'm sure I was a stupid child and thought this is how guys like courted women, and I was super excited for maybe that to happen to me one day. Never did, because Cameron Crowe doesn't direct my life. Pee Wee Herman does, so I don't get to have these sort of moments happen. But
you know, tomorrow night Lou and I are going to be outside your house.
That's fine. I'll probably be passed out.
We don't have any boombox.
I'm sure someone has a boombox somewhere.
No, we'll be playing Bonin' in a Boneyard.
Right.
Yes.
But it's basically a Romeo and Juliet kind of scene, and I loved it. A lot of people loved it, and it is a defining moment in movies. So, yay.
Are you getting choked up?
I am.
Aww. That's crazy.
Yeah, Cameron, like I said, Cameron Crowe didn't direct my life, so that's not happening.
Yeah, poor.
He did.
Pee-wee. Oh, my Lord. I guess I have to talk about something.
Please.
Is it my turn?
Well, no. If you don't mind, yeah.
Okay, I'll talk bother about
you. We like to keep it rolling here at the old
rolling in the circus tonight. Oh wow. Okay. This is one, and I know that Keith loves this as well because we have talked about this over many bourbons.
Is this gonna? I have this on my list too.
And in the movie Goodfellas, when. Right, Keith? Keith has exactly.
We just started it with that, and everybody knows what's going on.
He knows that this is when they've pulled off the Lufthansa Airlines heist, and Henry Hill is kind of narrating. Ray Liotta's narrating, and they're finding out all that they just went ahead and killed everybody else who participated because so he could keep all the money for himself.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And as this horrible stuff is being shown, they're playing this. And the ending of Layla by Derek and the Dominoes. And this is such an interesting song. This is kind of like a day in the life in the sense that it's kind of two songs put together.
Mm-hmm.
And this song was written by Eric Clapton, the first part. And then the second part was written by studio musician Jim Gordon. And what's so interesting is Scorsese... The way it's portrayed in the film, if you think about it, Scorsese's kind of saying, yeah, you know the hard rock part. Like, that's like kind of implied.
Mm-hmm.
Because of, and that kind of like speaks to the edginess of kind of what's happening with the dead bodies.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you kind of go like, no, wait a minute. This is a rock and roll song. Mm-hmm. There's this beautiful thing playing now, but this is like an in-your-face rock and roll song. And in the movie, it's like, there's this like, you know, dreamy kind of moment happening, but it's also tainted with like real murder.
Blood.
Yeah, blood, guts, and everything. but Scorsese was one of these guys who likes a lot of, it seems like a lot of us have picked these kind of movies where the director really had an intention. He wanted a certain thing to happen. Clapton's like main progression is that, you know, has that unmistakable, you know, ending. And in Goodfellas, we never really hear the energetic half first. And Scorsese knows that we know it and completely sort of plays a trick on our mind. That's kind of really what's what's really going on. The real life story of the supergroup Derek and the Dominoes, headlined all time ace guitarist Clapton and Dwayne Allman, is also a tragic one. The aftermath of their single Masterful LP is riddled with a sort of cautionary tales, which became only too common as the cheerful success of the 60s metastasized into various, you know, problems, traumas, life screw ups, and so on and so forth. So the Layla sequence not only has Henry's gang cannibalized itself, but so it's kind of referring to an entire generation. So it's a kind of metaphor that if you, so there's a lot of kind of like to unpack here, kind of what's going on. Scorsese's giving you this scene like with like multiple layers of meaning into it. Do you kind of get completely immersed in really what's happening? I hope that I explained that properly or well, or
yeah,
didn't sound like
I think it was good.
Yeah. Keith, Lily, I know you guys want to talk about it.
Actually, you got what I wanted to say, so you're good.
Do you want to say something about it, Keith? Because I know that you dig this.
I mean, yeah, it's a great song, and I think that they definitely put the second half of the song in, and that kind of makes it a little bit more unique to the scenes, because you got guys in, you know, hanging in meat lockers, and then just, you know, it's just a whole scene of just death after death, and it's just an interesting pairing, kind of like, you know, wine and ice cream. It's an interesting pairing. I don't even know what the hell that means, but okay.
Sounds delicious.
But it's just the way that the movie just kind of starts to go into that. They're just starting to knock each other off at that point. And it's, you know, it's a cool pick, and but interesting at the same time. So,
yeah, you're making a good point, because right after that, we find out that Tommy doesn't get made. He gets whacked.
It's whacked. Need to get made or laid. It was whacked.
It was the turning point in the movie where everything was going downhill.
Wow, good stuff.
Four minute montage of gore.
Yeah, it's a 4 minute montage with this gore, beautiful music playing.
I just think it's really interesting the way Scorsese, the opening where the intro to the second part of Layla, if I'm not mistaken, the Cadillac scene.
Yeah,
and how it very slowly pans up as the music is beginning to build. I'm like, that's really cool.
Well, there's the kids in the street playing stickball, and they start walking up to the car, and you know right away, because that's the car he told them not to buy,
not to show off.
His mother's name, though. I don't understand.
Yeah. Yeah,
and the fur coats and all things. Yeah, you knew he was going first.
Yeah. It was something that Scorsese really took from a previous filmmaker. If I could find my notes somewhere, I'll tell you who it was.
This is probably my most favorite movie of all time.
Oh, really?
Yeah, this has got to be number one for me.
What, Goodfellas?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Goodfellas. It's some Goodfellas. Yep.
It's like a desert island movie.
All right, Keith the Hawk Hawkins, what you got, big guy?
This movie probably has at least four to five songs you could probably put in this conversation, but this scene alone is, when you're a kid, is just worth the price of admission. This is Living in Stereo by the Cars from Fast Times at Ridgemont High, when the man of the hour, Mr. Badass himself, Brad Hamilton, is peeking out the window and then just goes upon him and takes it upon himself to have a little, you know, a little break, if you know what I mean, with him and his buddy. And then they start playing this tune, and he's like having a little fantasy where Phoebe Cates takes off her top, and the rest of it is. But when you're in high school, first of all, Phoebe Cates never looked like any girls in my high school, so I don't get that. But it's one of the things where you're looking, and you see that going on, and he's just having a good old time with him and his left hand, and that movie playing, that song playing in the background is just, like I said, it's works for that scene. But you could go for, you know, the Jackson Brown song when she's waiting on the corner, or even We Got the Beat in the beginning. I mean, there's a lot of songs in that movie that are just, you know, American Girls in that movie too. I mean, it's just that you could go on and on with that.
That's right. Yeah. It is in that movie.
Oh, that whole soundtrack is fantastic.
So I mean, that scene as a kid when you're like kind of sneaking and watching, and you're like, oh my God, what's going on here? You know, so. But that Cars tune is kind of a slower, more darker Cars tune, I guess we'll call it. They're usually their usual new wave upbeat stuff, but that's a great song, and it's definitely a cool pick for the scene in that movie, which is a classic movie too, you know. So,
Okay. Yeah. Good pick, Keith. Definitely. Definitely. Keith. All right, Kevin.
Kevin. Well, the funny, you know, going back to what Keith was saying, there's a funny story about Judge Reinhold taking his mom to the premiere. Uh-huh. And he forgot about that scene. And when that scene came up, he said he just sank in his chair.
What are you doing?
That's great.
I've met him before. I've met him before. He seemed skittish anyway.
Well, there you go. Maybe that's why. Traumatic.
Like a little scared cat.
So, like from the opening of this movie, the opening, the first few notes, you know what this movie's going to be like, and that is George Thorogood, bad to the bone, in the movie Christine.
Yes!
Oh, yeah.
It sets the pace.
High five for that.
It sets the pace for this movie. You know this car is, what, Lou?
Bad to the bone.
That's bad to the bone there, Lou. Yeah. Yeah, so every time I hear that song, I just imagine this red 57 Fury running over
me. I need one of those.
Mushy, I read the book about a year ago, and I, because the movie was so ingrained in my mind, I've seen it a bunch of times, I was picturing the actors as the characters. Right.
Yeah, that's fine.
That's who they were in my mind. That is not a bad adaptation either.
No.
Like,
no,
you know,
it's not bad.
The movie, the book took place where?
Oh, Pittsburgh.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
My favorite part about the book is they have the lyrics before each chapter.
Yeah.
That's my favorite
part.
Oh,
yes. Stephen King's a big rock music fan.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
Which brings me to one that I don't have on my list. I'm going to see if anybody, either one of you guys, picked up on it.
Okay.
But who's next?
Lily's next. Ladies first.
So I'm going to go to another high school movie, Dazed and Confused, Sweet Emotion. It's one of the greatest movies about the end of a school year in the 70s. And it is filled with several iconic movie moments, like Alice Cooper singing School's Out when school lets out. Mm-hmm. Actually, the rock and roll was supposed to be in this movie, too, but they couldn't get that one in the song. But this is the film's opening sequence that rocks the most sublimely with with the very downbeat of Aerosmith, Steven Tyler singing Sweet Emotion. A flame orange Pontiac GTO wheels around the school parking lot. You're simply in the 70s, and from the moment you never look back. My mom was around 15 or 16 years old at this time when the movie, like, the take place of the movie was in 76. She said it's pretty damn accurate to how kids were in high school in the 70s, so I thought that was pretty cool. Because there's several pictures of her leaning against these types of cars, right. And I'm like, this looks like Dazed and Confused, and she's like, yeah, it's pretty accurate to the time, so I think that's a very, and I had to include Aerosmith in here somehow, of course, so I thought that was a pretty iconic movie moment at the beginning of that movie.
Isn't Sweet Emotion also in Armageddon?
Mm-hmm.
I don't care about that movie.
Oh.
They recut it. Remember when they remade it, they did a video and everything to it? Do you remember that?
Yeah.
They also did that other horrible song in there, so that's fine.
That other horrible
song.
Yeah. Since we're talking about Stephen King, I'm going to just throw this one out there.
Do it.
Don't Fear the Reaper in The Stand. The 80s.
Yep.
I don't know. That's an amazing intro to yes, it was a television miniseries with John Boy from the Waltons or something like that. But
you don't care about that.
I'm kidding. No. That's some good actors. Gary Sinise and stuff. It was a TV thing. Right. But for its day, it really captured people's imaginations. And the way that it starts off, man, with that song and what's going on in the scene there with the virus being unleashed and all that is creepy as all get mm-hmm. out. And Stephen King is a huge rock fan. He's like Lily was saying at the beginning of each chapter in Christine, there's rock lyrics, and that's not the only book that where he quotes rockers. So, but that's a kind of like quickie honorable mention.
I'm gonna go have a drink with him.
Go ahead, King.
Yeah.
No, he doesn't drink anymore.
He would. If he met me, he would drink.
He
trust
would
me.
With Lily. I'm just saying.
Stephen King, you were of a sober for 30 years. Now you've.
I hung out with Lily Six.
All right. Speaking of sober, the only person who's sober in the room is Keith the Hawk Hawkins. Rein us in, brother. What do you got next?
I'm going to go with a little David Fincher flick. And this is Where Is My Mind by the Pixies from Fight Club.
Yeah,
and every time that song comes on, I think it starts popping in there. You know, and Edward Norton is just losing his freaking mind. And it's the perfect pairing. He's pulling up with all Brad Pitt's craziness, and just that movie just spirals out of control more and more and more, And it's a fun movie, never gets old, never gets boring, and it just goes from start to finish. But once that song pops in there, man, it's just the perfect song for that movie and those scenes. So
you mentioned
that's one of my probably between that and American History X, I think Edward Norton's one of my favorite actors, probably just in those two films. He was just strong, you know, and just everything he did, especially American History X, but definitely in Fight Club too. That was just, you know, he put on an acting clinic in both of those films.
You met me at a very strange time in my life.
Yes.
That song plays as the bank buildings are crumbling, and she's already shot herself in the face.
Just holding hands and just, you know, crumbling down, man.
You know, I did not want to see that movie. I was sort of forced into seeing it, and I was the only one who stayed awake for it. And I'm like my whole mind was blown away.
What movie did you say was your favorite of all time? Goodfellas.
Goodfellas.
Mm-hmm. Fight Club is definitely on the top five, maybe, of favorite movies of all time. Yeah. I absolutely love that movie. I think that movie is so powerful and so deep. I'm not going to get into it. I could do a whole podcast about Fight Club, but I won't get into that. Pittsburgh, Kevin. What, you got another one yet? Or
yeah, I do. So we discussed this topic. And the very next day, driving home from work, this song popped in, and immediately this scene popped into my head. I'm like, this is exactly what we're talking about. It's Magic Carpet Ride by Steppenwolf, and it was featured in Team America, where they all met at the headquarters.
Never saw that.
And I just, every time I hear that song, I have these visions of marionettes dancing around, and I'm like,
that's a funny thing. Because most people think of something else, right, Lily, when they think of that movie? They think of
Easy Rider. But I'm like, oh, that's funny. Yeah. Well, it shows you where
I did not
is.
See that movie that he's talking about.
You
so
don't have
I don't
to.
Know.
It's okay.
What do you got, Lily?
Next on my list is, I'm just going to go for an obvious one, Wayne's World, Bohemian Rhapsody, Queen, 1992.
Nice. Yes. Yes.
Most famous and ecstatic sequence in Wayne's World. This one really brought a whole new audience to Queen when it came out. We all know the scene, the beginning of the film, a carload of suburban loser party commandos cruise the wastelands of Illinois. Another Saturday night with no girls, no future, no particular place to go. They pop in a cassette of Bohemian Rhapsody, and suddenly they're not losers anymore. They turn into an epic choir of rockness. Really cool scene. They all sort of take a part in the scene. I don't think they're... I don't know. It's been imitated to death, the scene. Like, they've redone it 1,000 times. Other people have done it. If you get in a car with your friends and this song comes on, you are doing this. I don't care who you are. You are headbanging. At the scene that you headbang on every single time. You can't top the original, though. It's fantastic. They do the Galileos and the Magnificos and the whole thing. And I don't know. I just think it's awesome.
Freddie Mercury, unfortunately, had passed away by the time the movie came out. However, Mike Myers, this is another example. The studio wanted a Guns N' Roses song in there.
Really?
And Mike Myers said, I quit.
Yeah.
If it's not Bohemian Rhapsody, I'm telling you guys, know what you're talking about.
It's not going to work.
It's got to be Bohemian Rhapsody. And so, but Freddie had passed away by the time the movie. However, Mike Myers did a cut of that while the movie was being worked on, mm-hmm. and gave it to Brian May, and he played it for Freddie.
Okay.
And they all loved it. He's like,
oh, that's great.
In fact, Brian May said that Wayne and Garth were kind of that was their kind of humor. That's the kind of joke they made when they were hanging out together and stuff like that. And Freddie absolutely got it. He thought it was absolutely freaking hilarious. Cool. and he says that they always kind of thought that the whole song was sort of tongue in cheek anyways. And never understood why people took it so seriously. Mm-hmm. They thought it was just perfect for that. I'm going to throw out one more. Maybe I'll get another one in, but I want to talk about this song right here, because this is a song. The name of the movie and the name of the song are the same, and it was originally recorded by a singer, teenage heartthrob from Cannonsburg, Pennsylvania, and this is, of course, "Blue Velvet" by Bobby Vinton in the movie. Blue Velvet, the David Lynch film, which restarted the career of both Dennis Hopper and Dean Stockwell. They had been out of entertainment, out of the movie business for a very, very long time. And sort of introduced the world to kind of, to kind of what David Lynch was really going to become, which is this, Isabella Rossellini. It's a great movie.
Oh,
however, so let's talk a little bit about this, because... David Lynch had to have the song Blue Velvet. And the studio was like, okay, yeah, that's too expensive. You can't afford that. We're not paying for that. So do something else. And he's like, well, the movie's called Blue Velvet. I need the song. So they did all kinds of stuff. They brought in people to kind of like pretend, like cover it. That didn't work. They even went and got Bobby Vinton, put him back in the studio, and had him sing it, you know, again.
Right.
And it was like just not happening. Like it did not have the same effect. So Lynch went back to the studio. He's like, look, we have to have, I have to have this song. And he like took no money and everything. And it, I don't know the exact figure, but something like 80 to 90% of the budget for that movie is licensing the song Blue Velvet by Bobby Vinton.
That's crazy.
Wow. And it is insanely effective. So, and that movie is a, like a, became a total classic. And so they, you know, sometimes you should listen to the creative force behind whatever the endeavor is. Maybe they kind of know, like Mike Myers knew he needed Bohemian Rhapsody. David Lynch knew he needed Blue Velvet. On a side note in this, In Dreams I Walk With You by Roy Orbison. Roy Orbison refused permission for it. David Lynch found a way to get around it. And fast forward several years later, Roy Orbison was in a movie, wandered into a movie theater and Blue Velvet was playing. And he saw that scene and he loved it so much. He had Lynch direct the music video for it.
Really? That's cool.
So there's a little two for one there.
That's great.
On that. So good stuff. That's a great story. And I know Keith loves the movie too. Do you like the movie Blue Velvet?
Yes.
Do you like it?
I have not seen it.
Okay.
So I have one little tidbit here.
Sure. I like tids and bits.
Pace Bar Kevin, Bobby Vinton played my mother's prom.
Yes.
Every time I drive, you know, around here and I see like Bobby Vinton stuff, because he's from Kingsburg and that.
Yeah.
Oh,
I think of mom. I'm like, oh, if only she knew.
Anything you want to add about Blue Velvet?
My grandmother.
Okay, oh, here we go.
Grew up in Canonsburg. God rest her soul. Grew up, and her best friend growing up was Bobby Vinton's mother.
Get out of time. See?
That's great. I love that.
My mom.
She used to tell me all the time, oh, Bobby is such a good boy. You know, he's doing heroin, Grandma. Oh, he's such a good boy. He'd make up shit just to see it out. Bobby Vinton, he's smoking crack, Graham. You know, yeah.
No.
He's such a good boy, that Bobby Vinton. I love his music. I'm like, I'm sure you do.
My mom went to school, and Bobby Vinton was in her class. Everybody in Kansasburg's got a story about Bobby Vinton.
Exactly.
You know? It's like Donnie Iris in Pittsburgh. You know?
Donnie Iris.
Everybody's got a story. Keith, do you want to add anything about Blue Velvet, or do you want to jump into your next selection?
I think you touched on it. There was a lot of stuff about Blue Velvet I never would have known. So, I mean, that's we'll give you props on that, and just we'll put that baby to bed, as they would say. But if you're flunking out of college and you're on double secret probation, whatever that means, and you're gonna have a toga party for your last day, you're gonna have Shout playing in the background. So, a Shout from Animal House. The original song that escapes me. But in the movie, it's portrayed by the great Otis Day and the Knights,
yes,
who are just rocking tight-ass band. Otis is just the charismatic front man as anybody. You got John Belushi in a toga, and it's just it's a mess movie, but it's one of my favorite, like, throwback comedies. That scene is just – between that scene and the scene from the Drexler Lake Club when they walk in and they're like, we are going to die. That is the two best scenes in the flick, and that movie is classic. But as soon as they kick into Shout, that whole place, that toga party is rolling, man. So that's, you know, that's a good movie.
Zero,
and a good song for me.
0.0. That's a good pick, Keith. That's a great
movie. We're on double secret, but probation, whatever that means. I thought you were pre-law. He's like, I'm pre-med. He's like, I thought you were pre-law. He's like, well, what's the difference, man?
Oh, my God. Okay. I think we go around the room one more time. Kevin?
We look so much alike.
You do.
I can see where you are.
Somebody's going to change your name.
Okay. So, I know pre-podcast, this song was mentioned, but this is a different movie. So Freebird, by Leonard Skinner, you know. But you know. I remember it from The Devil's Rejects, the very end.
It's a great scene in Forrest Gump as well.
Exactly.
Used perfectly in that movie.
Yes.
And yeah, that's a movie there. I mean, it has, like, you could have several, like, picks Forrest from Gump. Forrest Gump. And that whole soundtrack, too, is pretty damn amazing. So. Yeah.
How about The Doors? No, that's cheating. I'm just kidding.
That is kind of cheating.
Lily.
I'm just going to go with The Breakfast Club. Don't You Forget About Me, Simple Minds. The very end scene where they're sort of all changing the way they are, like Ally Sheedy's character is becoming all beautiful and the hair out of her face. Claire is deciding that she wants to be with the hot bad boy, which that was me in high school. And then Brian doesn't get anybody romantically. He gets to write an essay at the end. So yay, Brian. Good for you. But he sort of explains at the very end of the movie that everybody is the basket case, the princess, the jock, what have you. And John Bender, the bad boy, doesn't have to say anything. He just thrusts his arrow up in the sky and it freezes on that. Yes. So two different ways to explain the end of the movie. They've learned something. Mm-hmm. Yay.
Mm-hmm. Joy.
Here's my imitation of the life at Big Bri's house.
Such a great scene. Actually, that whole movie is a great, there's tons of scenes for that.
Shut up, bitch. Go fix me a turkey pot pie.
Smoke up, Johnny.
The old man grabs me and says, hey, smoke up, Johnny. This banner effing year at the old Bender house.
Do That's I about the stutter? Size of a
cigar, isn't it? That movie, man. That's a classic there.
Good one. Good one. Good picks. Good picks. As I stated in the intro, I cannot listen to American Girl by Tom Petty without thinking of the scene, Silence of the Lambs. Catherine Martin, portrayed by Brooks Smith, is because Demi is gone and Tom Petty is gone, we don't really know who to ask. So her sort of story about it is this. She says, people always tell her that every time I hear the song, I think of you. But she's also been in Grey's Anatomy, Ray Donovan, and Bates Motel. But when she got the role, Demi was still kind of figuring out what music he wanted to use for the scene. And the script didn't indicate a specific song. So this is one where they weren't thinking of a specific song per se. It merely said Catherine was jamming along to the radio. So Smith's suggestions for the scene were not American Girl. She was into the New York punk hardcore movement. So she was hoping that they would do Agnostic Front or the Cro-Mags or Bad Brains or something like that. And that would be cool, too. That would definitely be cool. She did not want to become associated, though, with the song American Girl, which she kind of has become associated with that. You know, that isn't really her scene. But Demi secured the rights to a couple different tracks. And the first was American Girl. And this was a rock anthem about, you know, the sort of every woman. The second one, check this out, Keith. The other song that they were thinking about for that was Tell Me Something Good by Rufus and Chaka Khan.
Wow.
Could you imagine?
I don't know if I can see that happening.
Tell me something good.
That's a little bit bizarre, but yet I'm sure it would have worked. I mean, it was such a good movie. It's a great movie. So I don't know, like, I just can't. Yeah, I can't imagine that scene without American Girl at this point. So that'd be kind of hard. I like the Rufus and Chaka Khan song. That's cool, but I just don't know if I could buy into that as much.
I don't know that it's hard. I don't know that it's rocking enough.
What they wanted was a song that would put everybody in her corner. Mm-hmm. So that song really does it. Makes sense. An American girl, you know. It's got the whole kind of thing. So you're kind of rooting for her. And just because they're showing her and she's driving and it's a rainy night, you know something's going to happen. But that's because that song is playing, you're kind of like, no. Yeah. No, you're an American girl. Yeah. That's not right, you know? But Demi eventually made the choice that they were going to go with the Tom Petty song. And once they check once they did it, they realized it was just absolutely perfect. So famous movie moment, the American Girl routine was just simple in execution. Smith, who hadn't rehearsed her singing, done any singing along, remembers Demi deciding to shoot the scene suddenly at the end of a long day. She didn't literally drive the car. Instead, she sat on a soundstage where the movie's prop master shifted around 2x4 positioned under the wheels to simulate movement, and the rest came naturally. Smith just, she knew the lyrics and just went along with it. He's told her, he says, sing like you're just singing along while you're driving a car. And he said she was really familiar with that. So it wasn't really any real thing. It was kind of a routine kind of thing. And the rest, as they say,
is
history. Mm-hmm. It just is what it is. Keith, you want to give us one more?
Good. Sure. Let's see. I'm going to go with another classic comedy, but this one's actually done a cappella in an office, and it's Afternoon Delight from Anchorman. when Will Ferrell and company are singing that tune, they're actually harmonizing pretty well. I'll have to give them that. And it sounds great. And it's a part in that movie. I don't give a shit how many times you watch that movie. That comes up, you laugh your ass off, and you're completely the first time I seen it, I was like, what is this really going down? And it just makes it all the more funny. But the fact that they actually were singing and they sound good doing it, that's pretty impressive. But yeah, the first time I saw that movie, not only did I think the movie was really, really funny, but also was like totally taken off guard by them doing that scene. I was like, what the hell is this? But it just makes it funny. And it's not surprising when you have those kind of minds doing everything together. Who's the band that does that? I mean, that's one of the things that get away from me. So if anybody got that one, help me out there. You know, Lily, anybody?
Starlight Vocal Band.
I'm so embarrassed that I know that.
Why? That's great. I love that song.
Great harmonies. I was like, yes, who does that song? I should have wrote it down. I was like, yeah, I don't remember. What is it? Starlight Vocal Band.
Yeah, Starlight Vocal Band.
Wow.
Yeah.
One hit wonder.
What a creative name that is.
It was the 70s.
All for naught.
Said no one ever.
Wolf's Customs online. Get custom paint job on your guitar. RockRageRadio.com. Download the app. LouLombardiMusic.com. LoudiniRockAndRollCircus.com. Let's do something different. Let's move on to it. Because I think we're kind of like we could kind of go all day.
We could go for days on this.
We could go for days. We could go for days and days and days.
There he goes.
Wow. Yeah, these things happen.
It's a glitch.
Why don't we do this? I
can't believe no one had singing in the rain, Malcolm McDowell from A Clockwork Orange. We're kicking the shit out of that guy.
We can go on and on. I know what to ask.
Lily.
Stop it, Keith. Lily, can you please give us the online?
We have there. Bill Damiano watching, Warren Hughes, Tim Johnson, and Tracy Sampson, and Chris Thunderwolf. And they just sort of were watching and or saying Tiny Dancer is a great song. Things like that. So
That's what I want. I just want to make sure we didn't forget about the folks at home there.
Because we love you.
We love you.
Wow, that voice was weird.
Yeah, thanks.
That was very, very white of you, Kevin. Yes.
I don't know how I feel about that.
I practice.
Practice all the time.
I'm very aroused.
Especially when he's alone.
What?
How can I get you alone?
How can I get you alone?
You don't even like
that question. It's the question so many people have asked.
I knew somebody that said they thought that was the lyrics. Not alone, but a loan.
Oh,
yeah, how do I get you a loan?
That's a great bank thing.
Yeah, that's right? What I thought. That should be a loan. That has somebody like Bank of America, or somebody has to have like licensed that. You know, how do I get you a loan?
You better freaking copyright that right now.
Yeah.
Oh, in 1973, on this day, Keith, Marvin Gaye. He day.
I'm about to be confused with Marvin Gaye. So go ahead.
Released Let's Get It On.
Let's Get It On.
I like that song.
Became Gaye's most successful single for Motown and one of his most well-known songs with the help of the song's sexually explicit content.
Wait, what?
No.
No.
That's not even what that means.
Yeah.
It probably just was another song that Robin Thicke was going to rip off.
In the 70s, if the song had a sexual innuendo or a drug innuendo, that's what the song was about. Mm-hmm. There was no, like, you know, later on people were like, well, no, we were just talking metaphorically about, you know. No, they were definitely, that was a decade of screwing and doing drugs.
Well, that's because Tipper Gore didn't care then.
Tipper. That was before AIDS, too.
That's when Tipper was screwing and doing drugs, and then she got over it.
I know you're going to love this one, Keith.
I make no guarantees.
Do it.
On this day in 1974, ABBA's second album,
Waterloo,
entered the UK chart for the first time, peaking at number 28. The album title track won ABBA the 1974 Eurovision Song Contest.
Don't tell anybody.
Kevin wants everybody to know that was his first album.
Holy shh.
You know what? I'll give credit where credit's due. Everybody loves that album except for Napoleon. He hates that album. That's his least favorite of all the albums. He told me at a seance one day.
Whoa. Okay. I was going, wait, because we were talking about movies. I was going, like, is this song in Napoleon Dynamite?
You got excited for a minute.
I'm like, Keith found another one.
Napoleon Dynamite.
And of course.
But no, I got it. That's a great, that was a good, I see what you did there. Mm-hmm. I see what you did there.
See?
This is an epic day for Lily, I know. On this day in 1989, Nirvana's debut album Bleach was released in the U.S. The title for the album came from a poster, Bleach Your Works, urging drug users to bleach their needles.
Please.
Oh, well, that's nice.
See?
That's cautious.
Cobain claimed that most of the lyrics on the album were written the night before recording while he was feeling pissed off and that he did not regard them highly.
I do like the album cover, but I don't like the album.
These guys are great covers, but their music sucks. Okay. Here's one. I know Keith likes Radiohead. In 2003, Radiohead scored their fourth UK number one with their sixth. There's too many in this paragraph here. Studio album. Hail to the Thief, the title Hail to the Thief, a phrase used by anti-George Bush activists during the controversy surrounding the U.S. presidential election, was a play on Hail to the Chief, blah, 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 blah. A march played to announce the arrival of President of the United States. So they, yes, we get that. We know that it's a play on words. Who wrote that?
Somebody.
This day in music. Come on. Wake up.
You're fired.
I mean, it's written in English. People in English language know that expression. Oh, stop it. What's wrong? Hey, Keith, what's wrong with people? Can I ask you this question?
Please don't get him started. We only have a few minutes.
How much time you got?
We got 2 minutes.
So there's a couple things. Happy birthday to Ice Cube. Happy birthday to Steve Walsh, from the singer from Kansas, the first singer from Kansas. Sure. Harry Nilsson.
Yes.
Nilsson Schmilsson.
Oh, get out of here.
Yep. And Waylon Jennings.
Mr. Jennings.
That's the worst Waylon Jennings accent ever.
It was okay. Spot on. It was good.
Okay.
It worked. It worked for me.
Wait a minute. Are you telling me?
Oh, boy.
On this day, Lou.
There we go.
The Beatles have not done anything.
There was something.
There was a Beatles thing. Okay, gosh.
It's
darn down. You.
I thought
freaking,
maybe like every day.
It's in 2002.
Every day of the year.
Cheating. It's in 2002.
It is cheating, but
a rare autographed copy of the Beatles album, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, sold at auction for $57,800.
So it's possible that they actually took this day off their entire career.
No, they still did something. They sold some stupid album.
Right. Okay, then.
They have to have something every single time.
They have something every day. I was
so
just
busy.
Kind of going over because it's like every week. Like,
but it's like the running joke now.
Yeah.
I got the runs. Keith.
What a joke.
Anything?
You guys just weren't so good.
Keith, speak to me, buddy. What do you got going on this week? Anything coming up the folks at home want to know about?
The folks at home are going to come to 3090 on Frenchman Street Saturday. I'll be playing 3-6. Playing the blues, baby. Someone has to get the blues.
I guess the down knowledge. You got to play the blues.
Yeah, man. That's all I got this week. July is off the charts, but
right now, it's dumbing, it's coming to a little bit of a crawl, and then it'll go back up again. Yeah, it does this a lot.
I got you. You're riding.
You see what
wave.
I'm doing here?
You're riding a wave.
It's like trippy, man. Whoever's out there on acid, you're loving this shit right now.
Wow. And there it is.
Keith the Hawk 6, what do you got?
Lily, anyway. I do have a show on Saturday at the Subalpine. Lily 6 is live Saturday for June. We've got some out-of-town bands coming as well as Raven's Law and Neuroticism. So please come out and check it out. It's $12 cover at the door. And listen to Hot Licks with Lily 6 on Thursday, 6 p.m. Eastern, Rock Rage Radio. Get the free app, rockrageradio.com.
And anything you would like to add before we get out of here today, Mr. Pittsburgh Kevin?
No, I've got nothing. Thanks for reminding me.
High five.
I have nothing going on.
Lily, that's good enough for me.
All right, we're going to get the hell out of here. You guys have a great week. We'll catch you all on the wolfscustoms.online, rockridgeradio.com, ludinirockandrollcircus.com. Hawk.
Shrink me, pussy.
Hawk, Pittsburgh, 6, Ludini.
All right.
Have a great one, guys. Take care.
See you.
This is my new song. Buy it. All night.